Hi, everyone. You're listening to In the Open, a podcast by Mental Health America, where we talk all things mental health related.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. It's Teresa on our podcast, In the Open, and I'm here with two guests today. Super awesome that you guys are our first guests.
Yes.
That aren't MHA staff.
Wow.
Ooh, wow.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. If I wasn't seated, I would take a bow or something.
I mean, I did a jiggle.
Little dance.
Thank you.
So I want to get to know you guys because I know America introduced us, but tell me, who wants to start to just tell me a little bit about like why you give a crap about mental health?
Sure.
Why
do we give a crap about mental health? Sure, I'll go first. So I'll speak, I guess, from a personal perspective first. I care about mental health because, as I say tomorrow and to Mario, is that there's no health without mental health. And I realized that at a very young age that I need to stabilize my mental health to get through any task that I was completing. And that led me to a professional career in mental health, first being an ABA counselor working with adolescents on the spectrum, autism spectrum, then leading me to get my master's in mental health counseling, leading me to the addictions field where I've been for the last 4 or 5 years as a substance use clinician. And Mario and I had a friendship dated back since college years. And we've always, you know, again, prioritized talking about mental health because we realized there's no other way to get through this thing called life without, you know, having a conversation about that, which landed us into creating our own podcast.
Yeah.
And you're Princess.
I am Princess Asia. It's my first and last name.
Princess Asia. And Mario.
Hines. Yeah, we can go with Mario.
Mario Hines. Mario.
Yes.
Yeah, so you guys were best friends.
Yeah, yes. Were, are, will be.
Will be, right.
Forever, till death, yes. And beyond. Yes.
And beyond.
Yeah, we've been best friends since college where we met playing sports. And it's been an amazing 13, 14 years just growing individually and then like just as a friendship.
Yep, absolutely.
Really thankful.
I love absolutely. It. So I want to give Mario a bit of a time to tell us about himself, but then I want to come back to this friendship.
Absolutely. So for me, similar to Princess Asia, is that I always knew from a young age that I would thought differently than my peers. And once I started, you know, sports was introduced to my life pretty early, and using or connecting my life with sports and my household, and seeing what differences I had in my life due to sports, but not really understanding how my friends and I were different, where we were in our circumstances. So I started to think more and more about like, what was it that I was doing or not doing or thinking? And that kind of always, that started the wheel of thinking outside of just physical health. And then, yeah, getting into college, meeting a like-minded person and really starting to dig deep into, you know, my whys. Why do I do things? Why are other people doing things? Why are we connected? Why does our friendship bond stronger? You know, and how does athletics help us with that? And just the whole, all my whys. And like Princess said, we started to add language as we became closer, got more vulnerable, didn't have like that word and its intention now, but we really, you know, had to find moments where we're like, yo, this is crazy. You know, in college, we were both had to live up to certain expectations and live up to certain things. And, you know, that started to really, really put my mind into it's bigger than anything I'm doing physically. And once I was able to play, I had a pretty good college career, was able to play some professional ball. And, you know, that's when I started to really take the knowledge and gaining knowledge of mental health and the words and the concepts, and not just running with my own theories and anecdotes and in my own life, but learning that like this thing is so important for people like me, for me specifically. And then knowing that I'm not the only one, I can't be the only one because I've seen it from childhood and even into college and now into adulthood.
So you said you had a podcast?
We have a podcast. Yes. Called Talk About It.
Talk about it. Tell me a little bit about, whoever wants to tell me a little bit about the podcast. What is it about?
What is it about? So we just wrapped up season 1 and we're heading into season 2 shortly. So Talk About It podcast, initially it started, we wanted to have topics, mental health, as well as acknowledging athletes at all levels. However, what we realized is that there was just so much mental health to talk about. And there's just so much mental health. And of course, we tried to add in the athletics into that where we feel it's necessary and it aligns. We came up with this by just saying, man, people need to hear. So honestly, people need to hear some of these conversations. Not only do they need to hear, they need to join some of these conversations and add their own stories and their own perspectives and just have people talking about their mental health and their stories, their struggles, their healing process. And why not start a podcast around that?
I love it.
And big thanks to our network. It was geared around, you know, like AJ and I would have these talks, you know, any platform, you know, text, call, in person, psychedelic, any conversation we needed to have, nonverbal, whatever. And it was like, we could always, you know, make analogies or connect dots using our sports background. Hmm. So that's kind of where we definitely pushed that sports connection first. Like, geez, life is wild. Remember how life was so wild, and then this sports, you know, scenario, this sports experience. And then, as Princess mentioned, we start to realize, like, every time we talk about something that's connected with sports, it really hits harder, hits more, just the understanding that sports was our platform to help us recognize the everyday common, you know, struggles and experiences that struggling with mental health or being aware of mental health on a surface level or deep level or whatever comes into play.
I was like the nerdiest, most tripped up, picked the last. Just, it was real embarrassing. I had no friends.
Oh, man.
I still do not understand the sports ball.
Sports
thing.
Ball. I mean, you saying that like makes me really good, the sports ball thing.
I'm playing on my ignorance. But I don't even know what that means, what you just said. Like, I have no, like, context for even understanding what you mean by making connections. But I'm very curious, like, what do you mean when you're like, oh, I'm connecting my mental health to my sport experience? Oh, yeah. And this is really being like a eye-opening thing. Like, what does that even mean? But for me, the only analogy I have is to cower in fear.
Oh, man.
Yo, so the thing about that's
shame
funny.
Shame and fear.
The thing about that is that a lot of that shame and a lot of that fear is actually hyper intertwined with everyday athletics. So, like, there's two ways I can add context. One is coming from the outside in right now as being what AJ and I deem ourselves as former athletes, even though you never really lose it. You know, right now I think about, I work with youth and youth development, the youth development field. And I think about high school students, especially the seniors, maybe even some juniors, and what back to school feels like. And right now the back to school feel, that the pressure is intensified for a football player or any fall sport athlete, because not only are you going into your senior year where it matters, friends, this and that, but also you're thinking about kids that want to play at the highest level or have certain personal goals, have certain team goals. So you add that, you know, what could be anxiety, what could be pressure, what could be expectation as a senior to say, this is either my last hurrah or I have to get that scholarship so I can go to school because my parents can't pay for it. And so that's like one angle that we always get to connect, like, just mental health with, like, that sports scenario. Personally, August was always a time where it's like, that was the, you have to be prepared by August. So, you know, you live this calendar of, you know, summertime where it seems fun, but from 2004 to 2008, you know, specific to college, the summertime was spent getting prepared for your season. It was not, we found times to have fun because what college student doesn't, but that idea and pulling from, you know, having to get up at 6 a.m. for workouts, you know, on a beautiful 85 degree day in July, and what that means for, like, if you're not feeling well and you missing out on that vitamin D early on because you got to go focus, you got to contribute, you've got people relying on you, all these things that can come into play. So those are the contexts that we like to bring up or in season one or just in our daily lives that help us, you know, connect mental health to everyday stuff.
Gotcha.
for me in everyday life, just with going back to the analogies of things, like right now in my life, I consider this, I'm in fourth quarter with a few minutes left on the clock. And that's how I do my everyday. And if I say that to Mario, he'll know what I'm talking about. I'm always relating real life issues to sports, whether it's basketball or football, because I love football and he loves basketball. And it's just great to just have that understanding and that language around it. For instance, I'm, you know, in between transitioning doctoral programs right now while working full time, having the Talk About It podcast and getting ready for season two. And it's fourth quarter time. And I'll say, you know, October is my off season. So pretty soon I'll get to rest. I'm in fourth quarter right now and I just got to push through and figure things out. And and it's not a layup. It's not a layup. Yesterday with the malfunction with the technology, Teresa, I told Mario, I go, man, I can't believe that.
Right.
Was a fumble.
Literally, that was didn't even connect that because I automatically knew in the language, like a fumble is like the that's the play you don't make as a football player. You know, you never want to fumble. Yeah. And she said, you know, Asia said, that.
Yeah, I was like, wow, what a fumble. And Mario, with words in a football game, what he did is kind of hit my helmet, like after a fumble. He goes, it's not a fun, it happened, but like, let's just, you know, pick it up. So, and I felt that, and I'm just like in the game, and I'm like, it's just a fumble. But I'm like, all right, you got to shake it off.
That is so wild. Basically, you're telling me that there's layers of understanding and metaphors that I just don't have access to. This is a podcast on cultural competency. This is an example of why you can't do cultural competency without coming from that culture. Because I have lived a life of understanding that a fumble, like you dropped the ball. No, you didn't just drop the ball.
Yeah.
You let down yourself and your playmates and your country.
Exactly.
Exactly, the entire country.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's a lot of those analogies. And like, and Teresa, don't feel bad. Anytime we're around friends, like, or partners, they're like, oh, here we go. You know,
yeah, those
that talk or Scorpio talk. They'll say, because we're both Scorpios.
Of course,
had to say that on air.
That's funny. So today we're going to talk about feeling pressure and expectations, which you guys kind of already introduced. But maybe, you know, I mean, I can share about feeling pressure at different times, but I really want to hear from you all. Like, what was that like for you thinking back or thinking about now? Like, what does pressure even mean? What does it look like for you?
I'll give it in the beginning of my college career, the pressure I had dealing with athletics, but it was coming from more of a personal place in my personal life, but affecting athletics. And unfortunately, I was in high school and I was a troubled teen. That's all right. That's an adult way to say it. I was a troubled teen and I lost a lot of my college opportunities due to that, just kind of playing around, not doing what I needed to be doing. And I lost the opportunity to play at the college level at the time. And I had a lot of pressure because I was known in my, like, that's all I had. You know, I come from a lower income background, and to make it out of that environment, typically it's sports that would carry you out of that environment. So I had a lot of pressure to continue playing or just to get out of that environment. And what it felt like at that time, I believe I was 18 years old, what it felt like at that time, if I don't do this, then I'm no good. Mm. And that kind of pressure at that age, it's really not something I knew how to communicate because I didn't really know what I was experiencing at the time. However, with that pressure at that age, and where's the pressure coming from? I'm unsure. I guess just trying to, you know, assume that people have these expectations of me because this is the one thing that I'm very good at. And I had a lot of pressure. How am I going to continue my athletics or get to the college level? And I was able to do that with some support from a mentor and just sending out highlight tapes and things like that. And then one school replied to a highlight tape, but they happened to be in Kansas and I was in Boston. And, the pressure was on. Am I going to, you know, season was starting in about 2 weeks when the coach reached out to me. And there was a lot of pressure on me. Like, I can stay here, you know, in Lowell, Massachusetts and continue working at KFC. Shout out KFC. I was working there at the time. Or I could, you know, take this chance and, you know, get on this plane and take my career, my athletic career to Kansas. But there was just so much pressure to make a decision. And primarily, it was just a sports decision I was trying to make in that moment. And as I reflect back, I moved like I didn't have a choice. Mm. There was nothing else but pressure at the time. So there was no other option but for me to give in to the pressure and make a choice. in the game, obviously, that's very different, but that's just a very specific scenario where I had the pressure to perform or to take action. And I ended up, I guess, making the right choice and flying to Kansas and then, you know, later on receiving the Division I basketball scholarship. So there's a lot of pressure around just me getting out of my situation and connecting to sports in that way to be deemed successful.
Mario, we relate to that.
Oh, big time. And I know that's a, you know, a mountain moment for Princess, and, you know, we can probably pull out like four or five of those in our current lifespan. But for mine, I'll fast forward a little bit. As I mentioned, I had a pretty good career. I was supposed to be good at the sport. I came into the schools with the expectation that I was going to be, you know, one of the better players on the team. That was just understood due to, you know, circumstances in my high school career. So I met that expectation the best that I could, a 17, 18, 19 year old could. So we get to my, will be my fourth year in school, but my third year of eligibility on the field, which is another story of resilience and youthful ignorance. But so I'm in my third year on the field, and I've always had a three-year plan as far as the field goes, because I put that much work and effort into the sport, and it was time to play professionally for me. And what that meant, though, from my childhood on, is that it was to take care of my family. And at that time, my friends, I want to take care of the hood. Like, I can't wait to get to the league so I can take care of the hood. That was the goal. You know, I'm from Detroit, Michigan. So, you know, chronicle history of economic crisis and whatnot, and living through that. So I'm getting to, you know, a couple games into my senior year, and every week the pressure is building because you have to put together this resume. Coming from a Division I school, the position I play, you know, my stature, my physical stature, I would be considered small for the position I play. Luckily, I was pretty fast, but, you know, having to live up to those challenges and knowing what I was going to face, but not being able to back down from that, leading all the way up to, you know, my final game. And there's a buzz around, you know, me leaving school, even though I had another year of eligibility if I would apply to it. Obviously, the coaching staff wanted me to take that extra year. But for me, in my head, I didn't have any more time. Things were happening at home that I didn't share with anyone, in the need for, you know, me to get going with this skill set, and get the paycheck. So, you know, the buzz was building, and I had this decision to make to actually make myself eligible for the NFL draft. And I did do that. And, you know, things started to go my way in a sense, but then, my school, actually, there's this thing called a pro day, which, you know, athletes use to exhibit their talents to professional scouts and coaches. And Robert Morris didn't have one. And so I had to figure out what pro day to get to. And that was pressure in itself. And once I was lucky enough to be able to go to the University of Michigan, which has a storied football background, all 31 NFL teams come to this pro day. I'm there as the only non-Michigan athlete, you know, non-University of Michigan athlete. And all these guys, as much as I had the expectations of being great, theirs are that much higher. So I have to live up to being compared to these guys with a short physical stature, first time I'm in the facility, and, you know, and then perform physically and take all the, like, I can't show any mental duress, any mental stress, any mental strain, and just perform my best physically. So all what was riding on it was taking care of the hood. So that there was a moment where I'm like, this is what pressure is.
That's a lot of weight. I mean, like that, like I'm hearing your story and like thinking about what pressure is, and you're describing that these decisions that we sometimes, in some ways, think about privilege, like you're privileged if you can make a decision about going to college without the weight and the responsibility of saving your hood or being the breadwinner for your family, or the pressure of being the first one in college. That's a lot of weight, right? So that's what pressure is. You can't just make a decision that could be just like a nice decision for you. You're focusing on so many other things and other people, and the expectations are like, what does that decision mean? And I got to make it now, and I got to do it not for me, but for other people, mm-hmm. other things that I am now taking care of. That's a lot of pressure. Yeah.
I don't know if this is the right way, but the way I live my life, that it's always bigger than me. It's always been bigger than me. I'm the middle child of 7 siblings. So I want to follow in my, you know, in some of my older siblings' footsteps, as well as provide, you know, a new version, a new view of life from what has been handed to us, the cards that's been dealt. We were raised by my grandmother. So her highest level of education, I believe, was 7th or 8th grade. And what's college to us? So I felt like I had the pressure. I know no one ever said to me, make sure you go to college, make sure you do X, Y, and Z. Those aren't really the expectations, to be honest. However, I know I just needed to stay alive and not get pregnant or do drugs. So the expectations weren't that high from others, I feel like. But for myself, I knew my potential and I knew that if I was present enough, that things would align for me. And I knew I had the natural ability to play basketball. So I took advantage of that privilege to provide for others outside of my family, just my community, those who have similar stories to myself. So that pressure, to be honest, sometimes is coming from yourself, yeah. because you just have the knowledge and the awareness that you could do better. So do it.
It is unspoken in many ways. It's hard when you're feeling that you feel when you're feeling pressured.
Yeah. I mean,
right. is just like stressed, right? Like you're just like dying maybe.
Absolutely. I would, it's weird actually. With one thing that what sport has done for me, I'm going to say for me because I've, you know, used it and made it an asset, is that what sport has done for me is that takes that feeling to now, and Princess hears me say it all the time, or anyone that's in my relative circle, is that like, I don't really feel pressure anymore because I've taken that goosebump or butterfly or, you know, bubbly feeling in my stomach, and I've equated it to get ready to act, be ready to act. And so I think I was talking to you, Princess, and I was like, it feels like a punt return. And that's, you know, when the opposite team kicks the ball to the other team, and they, and, you know, and so I was the guy that caught the ball and was trying to score points, and it was one of the things I was best at. And that, but that feeling, like, you can never shake that. Okay. Run all the worst case scenarios through your head. And then, you know, be ready to act once it's going, no more thinking. So now that thought, now that tense feeling that we all feel, you know, that tense feeling of pressure, that tense feeling of expectation. And I think maybe what I'm saying is that tense feeling of not meeting the expectation, you know, before the time comes, I've learned, or, you know, for better or for worse, to equate with action. And I think, yeah. With maturity, with a great support system, that I've learned how to make better decisions based on that action more times than not.
So you're saying that, like, over time, learning to recognize that feeling of pressure, but something that helped was that you became very good at releasing the valve. Like, that was like your way of going, pressure build, gotta act, release the valve. And then did you just say screw it to all the thoughts that were going on in your head? Did you put it in a box? Like, were you just like, nope? Like, I mean,
that's a good question. I say release the valve is actually great, and if I say it again, I will give you the credit, but like, release the valve is amazing. What happens for me personally is I'm confident. I don't know where it came from. Maybe it was, you know, built up over time, but it's a confidence to say I've done all I can in this moment. Mm. You really don't have time to fail, or you don't have time to say you can't. Like, analyzing is over. I can't create and analyze at the same time. And I'm very, very confident in my ability to create, or, you know, in youth development language, be an asset. So like, if you feel like you have some value, if you feel like you can be an asset, then once it's time to act, what I do is rely and lean on that value.
Cool. I want to come back to that. But before that, I want to clarify something that Princess said, which was, you know, one of the things wrestling with is trying to understand if the expectation is something you imposed on yourself, or if it's coming from other people. And it is hard for us when we're trying to figure out, like, why do I feel this pressure? Where does this expectation come from? To like, so talk to me about, like, how did you figure that out? Like, how did you wrestle with, like, because sometimes I think we put pressure on ourselves, and it isn't until we're older where we're like, that was the dumbest thing. Why did I feel like I need to do that? Like, pick that, put it in my backpack, like, carry that responsibility. You know, that wasn't even mine, but I felt like I needed to do it. And you're like, How did you come to figure out how to make sense of all that?
Two of the things that I constantly work on, one being my self-awareness and being able to hold myself accountable. And every day my self-awareness grows, and at least I put the effort in for it to grow. And what I realized is, to be completely honest, is that others' expectations for me were too low. And
oh, interesting.
As I became more self-aware, that is a skill in itself. And if I'm able to be self-aware and be more present, I can only imagine where I could be. So with that mindset, I started to realize, yeah, you guys have these expectations, but this is really me. I'm holding myself accountable to saying all this pressure, and that everyone's asking me to do X, Y, and Z. And if they are, that's fine. However, me deciding whether or not to carry out that action that's my responsibility to choose. So holding myself accountable to what I want to do, to what I want to say, how I want to live my life, and pointing out the discrepancies in other stories or in my story of the things I'm telling myself.
It's interesting because some of the similarities between you wrestling with what am I accountable for, and like, what is it that people are putting on me, and listen to Mario say, like, I'm working through my thoughts and I'm gaining confidence. I'm working through skills that helps me feel confident. It's basically describing a process where pressure and expectation moves from something that someone else puts on you that's external on the outside. And how do you bring that inward? Because that may be the only way, right, for us to truly be able to build skills to manage pressure and expectations, right, is to actually gain control. And the way you gain control is like what you guys are describing, is like those experiences that you had, they moved inwardly to something that you could say, well, I did this and I have control of this. I make decisions about this thing in my life. How do you deal with what people say to you? Like, how do you set those boundaries so that like that crap doesn't come in when you're, what did you call it? Chasing your ball? Sorry.
Chasing your ball. The ball.
That actually works, though. Yeah. That actually works.
You didn't. Yeah. You actually caught it and ran. So I'm
catching the pun. Catching the pun, actually. Move? Yeah. That's awesome. No, I think, how do I, you know, and it's again, what sports has done, I'm thankful for the privilege that I have to be in America, where sports are held in a place that platforms, you know, my other deficiencies or my other in advantageous things in my life. But we literally have a crowd. We literally have noise that like can mimic and say, like, this is the outside thing that actually you have no control over. It's, you have, you know, you may have a stimulus to what they do, but you have no control over how loud they're going to be, at what point they're going to yell, at what point they're going to yell their loudest. So how do you block that out? I think is, you know, habit forming, repetition, you know, those boundaries. Mm-hmm. One big thing, this may sound bad, but this is one of those things that you get when you listen to our show, is like, Mario, are you sure you want to say that? But it's like, you're up there and I'm down here. And that's like the boundary in general or overall, mm-hmm, or the analogy there is that we're playing two different roles right now. So my focus is on the role that I have to play. You know, your role may be in this function, your role may be only to be noise, you know, and either you're going to cheer for me or against me, but I have to do the thing. I have to act in this moment. And so learning that and building the habit to leaning into that role, because it's hard. And it's one of the things that we practice all the time. And coaches say a lot, like, it's going to be a loud Friday, Saturday, Sunday afternoon. It's going to be loud. They're going to be, you know, so it's not to say it's easy. I don't want to make it sound like I'm saying it's easy, but that is the habit forming, and boundaries, I feel, are that difficult. What's the screaming from the outside? And how do you put yourself in a role that says, okay, you're going to scream. I'm not going to fight the fact that you're screaming or that I hear you. The fact that I'm playing a different role than someone that has to, you know, be the noise.
Yeah. I like that, because like the noise that comes from us sometimes is the noise of our trauma, right? Like hearing and thinking about the things, the bad things people say or do. And you're saying, I have to build the habit of saying, you know what? What's my role? Today I choose me. Today I choose to do this thing. You had to identify your role and you had to practice it. Describing it as a habit is exactly, in many ways, important, because so much of expectations we like assume, just like I think I remember you said, Princess, like, the expectation you had was, if I didn't do this, I am a failure.
Right.
But how many times in our expectations and pressures do we go, this is a habit. I have to have a habit of saying, no, what you put out is not what I'm going to take in. That is not me. Your loud boos are not me. That's your role. I'm right here. I'm going to catch this ball. I'm going to kill it.
There, hey, that was Teresa.
Okay, I'm going to kill it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But how about you? How about you, Princess?
Yeah. Boundaries is, again, an ongoing process. Establishing those boundaries, trusting my own boundaries. And you mentioned kind of like taking the outside in, and how I'd like to see it is that I'm taking it from the inside out because everything around me is everything around me, but there's still me. Like Mario said, you know, everyone has to play their role, and you don't know your role until you look within, until you accept what is within. Mm-hmm. And I guess for me, the pressure, we talk about it in such a negative, right? It's a negative thing. Oh, this pressure. I love it, actually. Mm-hmm. I love it. Let's go. Let's go. Mm-hmm. Where's the pressure at? Mm-hmm. I need it. I want the full court press. Mm-hmm. I want you, you know, up on me when I catch this ball, because I want to show you my work. And if the pressure's not on, I can't say that I won't live up to my full potential, but let me show you what happens when I have that pressure. So sometimes it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
So I don't ever say, no, I don't want it. Please, if you have it to give, please let me show you what I do under pressure. And again, I think this is both because Mario and I, you know, are offensive players in our sport. So, so that's really important to note that, like, yes, I'm pretty good at defense. However, I like to score, and I was in a position to score. And Mario also played a position to score. And scoring, oh, it's a beautiful thing.
You got to do a thing. Like, that's your job. In the sport.
Yes, it's one thing that we have to do. So I love the pressure to have to score. And the fact that I'm in a role where I have to score, I always have to see the next play. Mm-hmm. I need to kill the play that I'm currently, you know, devising. But the next play already has to be planned out until I score or until my team scores.
That makes a lot of sense, because we say, look, people aren't going to live without anxiety. Like, it's normal to have anxiety. We all need pressure.
Yes.
Just like we procrastinate till it's the end, and then we do, because we need pressure. But is there a moment in your life where you looked at the pressure you had and it was crushing expectation? What does it feel like for expectation to go overboard? You know, does it destroy you in that point?
I think that does really speak to me for my boundaries. I don't even want to put myself in situations anymore. Once I self-assess my, you know, and then also assess the environment, the situation, my boundaries going into that. So there's only so much you can hand me. I don't care how much you have. I have a boundary. There's only, I'm telling you my capacity for that thing.
Yeah.
So being more self-aware is going to allow, it allows me to not even put myself in those situations where people are trying to put a 2 gallon, you know, of milk in my pocket.
Yeah.
I don't have that. Look at my pocket. Remember?
Yeah.
This is where I'm at with whatever you have. So whatever you have, it needs to fit in this.
Yeah. And you've learned over time to say no and put it in its place, to say, I can't pick up that problem. I can't pick up what you're putting out.
Yeah, it's a process. I'm still in that process, but yes.
It's interesting because I think of two different experiences in my life. If I said yes to something, like one day my sister was like, go to court for me. I was like, what the hell? I don't want to go to court. That's scary. You know?
What?
Yeah. So I go to court first the whole time. I'm like mad. And then I get to court and it's horrible. Like, I just cried the whole time. And then I cried and I yelled at her the whole way back. And I was just, and then it was the first time in my life when I was younger thinking, why did I even say yes? Like, why did I say yes? You know, and it was a moment versus like a building expectation where I realized, oh my gosh, I don't know how to say no. I feel like I have to say yes to everything. And there are some people in my life who I especially don't feel like I can say no to. And I had to learn that, like, you know, maybe just avoid my sister because I can't say no to her. So I just got to hide for her for life. Wow. Like, don't ask me to help you because I can't say no to you. So I'm going to do a bunch of things like go to court when I don't want to. But that pressure is different than the everyday grind, you know? I have a harder time setting boundaries with being a parent, for example.
Yeah.
How much am I supposed to love my child before it kills me?
Give
or my husband, you know, like I got to be good to my husband.
What's the measurement?
Like, I don't want to be good to my husband or work on this relationship or work at my job. Like sometimes you just, it's so like a smaller grind because they're not putting like quart on your pocket or a gallon in your pocket. Because when that happens, you're like, oh no, I don't want to take that gallon. But with some responsibilities in life, it's not. It's like they put a jelly bean. It's like a million jelly beans over time.
Give me something else or nothing. No, I can relate to that big time. You know, I love the jelly bean analogy because I love analogies. Another is scoring, you know, and it reminds me of a play, honestly. There was a moment in time that reminds me of this where, you know, the steady everyday grind is showing up to practice, being disciplined, doing your sprints, you know, making sure you're in good condition, studying your playbook. Those are like the normal, like, that's not extra. You signed up for it. You actually are willfully complicit in it. And then you got those game moments where it's like, okay, the ball's going to you for this play. That's very important. and you kind of like, I got to agree to this. I got to agree because I'm, you know, I'm here now.
You're and there was a time.
Exactly. So it's like, there was a time in my junior year, which would be my second year of eligibility, and it was the homecoming game. So at that pressure, it's the most important game. Everyone that's ever played at the school for the sport shows up. Everyone that has never played for the school shows up. And earlier in the game, I think it was the second or third quarter, and this one play is called that is specifically for my position. And again, with the context that Mario will make the play, that is always the baseline. So I don't know what happened. I don't know what I was thinking about, but I ran the play completely wrong. I understood it. I tapped my head. I came to the sideline. You know, Coach Walton asked me what happened. I told him what happened. He gave me that look like, you are so aware of it that it makes me more frustrated. And so what ended up happening is we go into overtime with this team, and we're at the one play, you know, win the game type of situation, especially fourth down, which is the last down you have to keep a possession in football. And we run the same play because it's a foolproof play, and you know, it's going to me. So I don't shrink. I make the play, you know, game winning touchdown. And this is against the number 19 team in the country. So there's a very, very big deal. So it just reminded me of like agreeing, you know, in that feeling in the first time I quote unquote agreed or said yes to this play, I wasn't prepared to make it happen. And then learning, you know, okay, if I say yes, how to accomplish this, or, you know, if I say yes, how, what it looks like if I don't follow through, so I can know how and when to say yes.
Knowing how and when to say yes, which is weird for me, because you're saying you have a choice in this play, but I also don't think that you did. Like, the all expectation was it.
You don't. You don't really.
Nobody was like, oh, it wasn't like Mario could tap out and be like, I'm not going to do this. So, Princess, any thoughts on how do you deal with the slow building pressure?
I deal with it all the same, to be honest. Pressure in general, again, I don't want to say that it's required for me to move. I'm very action based. However, I think there are parts of me that I'm still getting to know, and what pressure does allows me access to that, to rise to the occasion. And I think pressure, honestly, speeds up that process.
You really dealt with the opposite. That you said that the low expectation was something you had to overcome.
Absolutely, yeah, the low expectation.
Well, then tell me about that. What does that feel like? What is that like? Then, if you had to deal with the way that low expectations make you feel,
that laugh right there is what I do. Like currently I laugh, you know, it's not in a malicious, like, oh, I'll show you and watch in this revenge. And it's not that. It's kind of like, oh, you don't know me. And that is fine, because I'm still getting to know me as well. But okay, here I am and I'll show you. But again, I was 17, 18 at the time, and realizing that, wow, you guys, all I have to do is go to college, because I knew I had the talent to do so, but I just had got expelled from high school and options were low. But I'm like, I just need to go to college but I'm going Division One. Is everybody on the same page with that? I'm still going Division One. I don't know how right now, but that's where I'm going. And the expectation at that point was, one, can you just stay out of trouble? And if you go to college, that would be amazing. But can you stay out of trouble? And again, at that age, I just knew my ability. You know, I had the support of my siblings, my family members that, you know, were encouraging me and acknowledged that I still had that ability despite my wrongdoings at that age. So the low expectations for me were like, okay, I'll put five on that. You know, not only will I go to college, I'll go Division One, and I'll get someone to pay for it. So any expectations at all, that's really not pressure for me. I can't say that that's pressure for me at this point, because someone else's expectations is still someone else. Mm-hmm. It's not me. But I do know my potential, and I know what's my responsibility at times. And again, this is a process. I'm speaking in the now. However, I know I still have so much to learn about myself and what it means for people to bring me things that I don't agree with, or mm-hmm. say things to me, or invite me to places that I don't necessarily agree with or doesn't align with me. But yeah, so the low expectations at that age was, it was difficult in the sense I hadn't experienced it before. That was one of my first times. Now in my adulthood, again, it's a let's go.
Yeah. And in some ways, being able to overcome the negative voice, you know, the doubt or the fear, the crushing fear, whatever that happens to us when we're dealing, it sounds like you both had something that helped you build confidence to keep going, to keep trying, to say, I'm gonna do what I do, but also do more. Was there something in your life that helped you feel like you could keep going, even if you faced, you know, what we call failure or whatever?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, I think I know. I have growing up, my mother instilled so much, one, love, but also independence. She tells this story all the time that I was a crybaby as a child, as a baby, and that if I saw her in my crib and I saw her walk past my room, I would stand up and cry for her. She would not walk. She would hurry past me to make sure I didn't see her. Or if I did catch a glimpse, she would, you know. So that developed independence, and she stuck with that. And I think, you know, the love plus that independence allowed for safe, secure trial and error. Mm. And for me, you know, being action-based, that trial and error, I never waste a failure. I never waste an error. And that would be confidence builders, because nothing ever, I've had some rock bottom moments, don't get me wrong, but, you know, I've never stayed there. I've never laid down. So each time that error will bring me to what I would call a more challenging, bigger and better trial. And every mm-hmm. time I would be willing to face more pressure or different expectation, and more pressure and different expectation.
Oh, there's so many good nuggets in there.
For me, the confidence I've come across has been, again, just the self-assessment. Yeah, looking, you know, I have all the power that I need. I have everything that I need within. And I know that sounds so cliche to say, right? Like, right. You want to change the world, start with self. And yes, actually, I know I have just so much potential, and I'm still working on this thing that we call right now self-love, whatever that means. But outside of me, I'm the middle child of seven siblings, and we are extremely close. Being raised by my grandmother, she took us in at the age of 9. And it's a bond that only pressure, I feel like, only hardship, only trauma could really build. And sometimes I wonder, would I have the support had I not went through the things, or we went through the things that mm-hmm. we went through? So I've been very thankful enough to have the support system to know what it's like to be down and out, but then also have the expectation of for themselves to rise to the occasion. So I've always had those people around me, equally around me, being the middle child, high and low, to balance me out and to provide me with the reassurance that I would need at times, that I still need at times.
Yeah. I hear pushing through. I hear people set you up to feel like you could not see failure as the end. Both of you talk about seeing failure the way we want to see failure, because not failure, it's growth. Hey, it's growth. Yeah. Right. These trials will push you and hurt you, but they make you better. They make you who you are if you allow it to. If you allow it to do that for your life versus sitting on the ground, utterly crushed, crying at our moms, you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
Right. And do that. And I encourage people to do that if that's where you feel like you're at at the time. Like, cry.
Absolutely.
You know, give yourself whatever version of breaking down or stepping away. And I just wanted to add, obviously, like, my best friend Mario of I don't know how many years, like, I have my siblings, but there's some things that you just want to talk to your best friend about, right? And I've had Mario along the way for a lot of, like, these stories that I'm mentioning on here, to have a best friend that's, you know, also working on similar things in his own way, not doing it my way, but I know he's doing that self work, and having a friendship, a best friend who acknowledges and who honors those things has, I mean, look at us right now. We're talking on, we're guests on your podcast together. And I think that speaks volumes of, you know, where we've been, where we're at, and where we're going.
Totally.
So that support is definitely, you know, a huge part of my confidence.
Absolutely. Having support does help us feel more confident. Yeah.
Yes.
And that's right. Cause you don't, nobody's just going to be like, oh, that was crushing, what that person said hurt, and then just bounce right back. Yeah. Like, we all wallow for sure.
Yeah.
Like, right. You know, you gotta let yourself have that time. Cause a lot of people feel bad. They do. They ask us questions like, you know, I, every night I go to bed and I cry every night, you know, and there's something that's the shame about expressing our feelings, our emotions, or giving us our time to feel. When something crappy happens, like, you feel crappy. That is a normal reaction. You should not feel bad about that.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And then after some designated period of time, after you feel like you have cried your cry and your tears, you know, that's when you go, okay, when is enough enough?
Yeah.
That's the,
absolutely.
That's the step you have to take to say, how will I no longer be crushed by this expectation, so I could do the work and do what you guys describe, you know? Any last thoughts?
Last thoughts. I mean, just thank you. Thank you to the listeners for being, you know, vulnerable enough to reach out, share, curious enough. Thank you, Teresa, to South America. It's always good. We wrapped up season one a bit ago, and I know how good the podcast feels when we're doing it, but you know, I'm feeling it again. So I'm just really, really appreciative and thankful to you, Princess, as well. Just, I'm glad we get to do this and, you know, the platform, because it's always good to let the open the valve.
Open the valve.
Open the valve. Yeah. Yeah. Again, thank you, Teresa, for this opportunity just to share, you know, our stories, provide us with that space to talk about the things that we're doing. And I guess to leave with the audience, again, tune in to Talk About a Podcast. Just to continue to feel and talk about what you feel. Just don't resist what it is in the moment. Take that all in, good, bad, neutral, and then talk about it.
Well, I want to thank you both. And if you're checking us out, check them out on Talk About It.
Yep.
Right?
So you can find us. Yeah. Talk About It podcast.com. Yeah, the talkaboutitpodcast.com. You know, that domain thing, but also I think it has a ring to it. And you can find us on Instagram, TLK About It podcast as well.
So check out our friends, Mario and Princess, at Talk About It podcast, sports and mental health, which is, I'm going to have to check it out just so I can up my game.
We'll have you ready.
Yeah.
You sound ready, but we'll have you. Common language at this point, but you're actually ready.
We're going to, I was a band nerd. So we could talk, you could bring me on as a guest from the other expectation.
Yeah,
about
no
what
joke.
It was.
Okay.
I'm like, as a
band. Little drum line. Okay, cool.
All right, y'all. Thank you so much. Thanks everybody. And keep on fighting in the open.
Yeah.
Talk to you next week. Bye.